Hey, we're back for hour number three. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We're on to 11 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, you can listen to First Take with Steve Geller and Charlie Long. 1 o'clock, countdown to the Bud Light countdown to kickoff. Bobby Hebert will be at Rouse. Let's see. Will he be at Rouse's? Yes, Rouse's by Steve Geller, and then at 3:05 it'll be game time with Deuce and Mike Haas. And also, too, here's a little wrinkle: if you want to listen to the Pelicans Trailblazer game, you can listen to that on 870 AM, or you could keep listening to the Saints and Chargers on 105.3 FM, and you can listen to either on Odyssey.com. So that's the schedule for today. And all things legal will be off until November 24th. I think the Saints will have a bye weekend, so we'll be back. So we'll be off for another month. But we do have an extra hour today. So if you're tuning in and you're like saying, who are these guys? It's all things legal. They just gave us an extra hour to lead into the First Take. Colin, since you'll be the client, we got some text. So why don't you go through the text and we'll try to deal with them.
Yeah, let's see. Just pretend this is me asking and right. Not somebody else.
Gotcha.
But maybe, you know, grain of salt. Someone asked, can you get a divorce online if each other person agrees and doesn't want anything from the other one?
Okay, first of all, Colin, since you're going to pretend to be the client, mm-hmm. I'll need your credit card number for a retainer. Okay?
You guys are going to have to bill me.
So... So we'll be running it while we answer the question. So we want you to get the real feel of what it's like to be a client.
Yeah. And if you guys can ask me, like, oh, do you like your wife? I'll be like, no, obviously I'm trying to divorce her.
No. We're going to say, what's your credit card number first before we do anything? So anyway, just kidding. All right. Can you get a divorce online? No, you can't. You have to do that in person. Now, in certain jurisdictions, if it's agreeable, a lot of times we can get the divorce without going to court, without making an appearance in court. So a lot of times if it's an amicable divorce and both parties sign off on all the documentation, you will not have to make a court appearance. We would submit the documentation from the divorce to the judge and ask them to sign off on it without actual court appearances of the clients. It's two type of divorces. Well, there's three relevant time periods. If you have children after 18, basically you have to you can get a divorce after 1 year after the other spouse has been served with the petition. There's another method if you have children under 18 and you have lived separate and apart for a year. You can file for what is called a 103 divorce, where you ask for an immediate divorce. You have to serve the petition for divorce and you allege that you've lived separate and apart for 1 year and the other spouse has to concur in that. Then you can get a divorce for the next hearing date. Or if you do not have children less than 18 or younger, then the waiting period is 6 months from the time that you've been served with the petition for divorce. Or if you have been living separate and apart for 6 months, you can file for a 103 divorce. But if there's a agreement on the issue of divorce, then you can basically sign affidavits and other documentation, waivers of service. That would normally preclude an appearance in court to actually effectuate the divorce. And if you have community property, whether you agree or disagree, that would be dealt with usually after the divorce. You can effectuate a voluntary community property agreement with 30 days after you file for a divorce, but both parties would have to agree. All right, so that's a primer of divorce 1001 in about 3 minutes. Next text, Colin.
Also me, I guess I'm going through divorce and, you know, dealing with power of attorney issues as well. If you have two children, can both have power of attorney?
Albert, if you got two quarterbacks, you have none.
Well, the legal answer is yes. But the problem you run into is you've got a lot of skittish companies, banks, insurance companies, et cetera, that when there is a power of attorney issued in both or in two names, they're going to want two people to sign off on it. It makes the effectiveness from an ease of operation standpoint a lot less effective because, you know, somebody's in town, somebody's not in town. One of the two is they have a disagreement over what to do. There's just a lot of things. I always try to convince my clients to just appoint one. It is what it is because the whole point of it is to make it easier to handle the affairs of the person granting the power of attorney. And so if you're going to appoint two people, it just complicates it unnecessarily.
All right, because I use the analogy, everything goes back to football, that if someone wants to do two executors or two succession representatives or two agents for power of attorneys, I would say something like, do you know what the L.A. Raiders coach said leading into the season? And they say, what? Well, they had two quarterbacks. One was Garner Minshew, and the other one was the kid from Purdue. And I said, you know, when you have two quarterbacks, you really have none. Because what happens is if you have two, you know, if you have two agents, if they disagree, then you're back to putting it into a litigation framework. Because if you have two co-executors or succession representatives and they disagree on whether to sell a piece of property or not, then you're defeating the whole purpose of having a will in the sense of you have to go to court and have the court decide that at a great expense. If you have two agents who are power of attorney and they have disagreements as to what's the next course of action, then you have a situation where you inertia. You can't, you know, the financial institution or the real estate company may require both to sign off. One won't sign off. You're at an impasse, and so then you have a problem that is created that a power of attorney was supposed to alleviate. So, just like Albert said, I'm not a fan of having co-executors or agents in a power of attorney.
Yeah.
Because if there's disagreement, then it's self-defeating to have a power of attorney that you can't enforce, or it's self-defeating to have executors who can't take action on an estate. So, you'd be very careful of it. I always equate it to, you know, like I said, when a coach says, we have two quarterbacks going into the season, it means you have none. So, and that's a problem. So, by analogy, I would say that co-executors and co-agents have that same kind of dynamics. All right, do we have any other texts?
We got one more that's back to kind of what we've been talking about throughout the show. Good morning, Doug and Albert. I am 76 years old. I have never been married. I have no children. I do have a will, and I named one of my two nieces as the executrix. Should I have her on my checking account as well as power of attorney? Thank you.
That's a good question.
You know, yeah, I mean, a lot of people do that for just an ease of handling things immediately after the person would die. Certainly, you want to name your niece as the agent under a power of attorney, and that way, in the event of your incapacity, you can have someone handling your affairs for you during your lifetime. Thereafter, you have an executrix appointed in a will, and that person can handle your affairs afterwards. To make it easier, obviously you trust this niece, and then you might want to add that niece to your checking account, and she can kind of start paying your bills now, and you know, if there's an issue, even immediately after your death, before the bank gets wind of it, emergency type expenses can be paid, funeral expenses, you know, we continue to pay the house note if there's a house note or the insurance on the house or whatever the case may be. Those things can be done. of course, under the guidance of an attorney, that executrix will need to keep an accounting of everything and show where the money came and move all the money from the decedent into a into an account that that is set up, an estate account with a separate tax ID number, and to continue to pay the bills, and whatever income comes in, that can go into that estate account as well. But it's not a bad idea. I see a lot of people do it. And, you know, like, you know, some attorneys want a fee up front or half up front or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, you want to go see an attorney, then you have some funds there that are in the decedent's checking account to go ahead and you know,
pay for the funeral.
Yeah, pay for the funeral, pay for the flowers and the organist and all of those things. You know, it's not a bad idea to have a little spending money on the front end. Yeah, I would recommend it.
So you want to have an organist at your funeral?
No, but a lot of people do, you know. I want to have Billy Joel singing, but, you know, I don't get what I want a lot. So.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind. All right. Well, let's go to a break. Doug Santeri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Santeri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. California Dreamin', covered by the Beach Boys in 1985. I think they sing it better than the Mamas and Papas, personally. But that's a matter of debate. And do you think the Saints are California Dreamin' right now? They're in Los Angeles, and we'll see. They're getting healthy, or... They'll have Taysom back. They'll have Olave back. Is Cesar back? Cesar Ruiz back, or is he still? So that's
Cesar Ruiz is back.
So we got a little, you know, sort of mixed emotions. No matter who's the coach, if you don't have the horses, you're not going to win. And they haven't had players, so we'll see. We'll see if he can coach them up and take care of the Chargers. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Steve in Baton Rouge, a town in mourning, Baton Rouge this morning. He's got a question regarding an appeal. Hey, Steve, you're on All Things Legal. What you got for us, brother?
Thank you. I am a plaintiff in a restraining order with four other individuals against a neighbor. And they are appealing, the defendant is appealing the restraining order, and it's going to the Fifth Circuit Appeals Court.
Yes.
And we no longer have the attorney who represented us in the original court battle with the restraining order, which we were successful, and they are appealing it based on a few administrative things that the judge did that they claim was in error. Now, we are no longer represented. How does the appellate process work, and should we be represented in this process?
No, absolutely. First of all, you have the opportunity to file a response brief to the brief that is filed by, in this case, the defendants, who would be the appellants. You would be the appellee, the person opposing the appeal. You'd have the opportunity to file a brief. The other issue would be is whether the appellants or defendants, in this case, requested oral argument. Usually the oral argument will occur 2 or 3 months after the briefs are submitted. So you're going to need an attorney to do two things. One is to submit an appellee brief or a response brief to their brief. And you could put in all the, you know, contest all the arguments and procedural objections they may have in this appellee brief. Then you would have oral argument. Now, typically in an appeal to Louisiana Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals or any circuit court of appeals, you will have three judges who normally preside over the case. And the three judges will... ultimately issue a judgment. You could have a situation where they all three agree. You have a situation where two agree and one doesn't. You could have a situation where if it's a matter of law, you know, they could decide to, possibly all deal with them you know, or have a full panel, which is not, which is very rare. But for the most part, you're going to need an attorney to file that appellate brief, to respond to the brief that is filed by the appellee brief to respond to the appellant. And you also, too, you can make whatever objections, make sure they filed it on time, make sure they filed the proper procedures to an appeal, make sure these issues are appealable. There's a lot of procedural and substantive issues you can address. And then you will also need them for oral argument if it is has been properly requested.
What if we, again, I am one of four, and nobody wants to move further. They even the attorney said it would be probably be a waste of money to submit a brief. Can one of us be in court and object verbally during the process?
No, I don't think you would be able to. I can't say that with certainty. But if you don't file a brief, you may waive your opportunity to object because you haven't provided to the court, you know, what your position is. In writing, the appellate court's not the people's court. You know, you can't go in there and sort of start talking with Judge Judy. I mean, this is a lot more formality to it, a lot more rules. There's certain rules on as far as what you can argue. Basically, your argument has to be based on the record and not a lot outside of it. So if they did let you speak, they would be highly irritated and rolling their eyes because they would probably not take kindly to it. I think that would be up to the judges previously whether they would let y'all argue or not. There's time periods that are involved. There's protocols that are involved. I don't know that they would let you argue in absence of submitting a brief because the court, you know, these appellate judges want to see what your argument is. And what they do is when they read the briefs, they'll give you 15 minutes. Now, you can break it up. If you're the appellant, that you can break it up for some for rebuttal. But basically, they read the briefs and start asking questions based on issues that are raised in the brief. So if you don't file a brief, they may not allow you to argue because you haven't put anything before the court. So, you know, if you wanted to, I would call the clerk of these judges and ask them. I'd call the first Fifth Circuit Court. There's a I forgot her name. She's very, very good. You could ask her, saying, "Hey, we're not planning on filing a brief. Do you think the judges will let us argue?" And she'll talk to them, and they may say yes. They may say no. You may want to check to make sure that oral argument.
I would think probably not. If you're not going to file a brief.
So.
Then they're not going to sit there and let you go argue something that you did not file. So, look, it depends. It depends on how vehemently you want to oppose this and or support this restraining order. If this is something you really want to do and you know have it effective, then hire an attorney, get them to review all the documentation. Or at least to review the defendant's brief and file the appeal on your behalf. If you want to just let it go by the wayside, you know, sometimes it's a financial decision when it comes to these types of decisions with restraining orders and just various, you know, various other types of litigation where it's, look, it's not worth the money anymore. Whatever happens, happens. And if you don't care, then, you know, don't get a lawyer and don't fight it. But if it's something you're still interested in, and look, you may still win. The court may just look at it and say, no, there's no real right here. But I think they're going to find it curious that you had an attorney and now all of a sudden nobody's responding to this brief. So it's a decision you guys have to make. But if you decide to move forward, absolutely, yes, get an attorney.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Kevin from Metairie, home of the West Esplanade Canal. Metairie, what do you have for us, Kevin?
Hi. My parents passed, and they bought a house in the 60s for like $40,000. Now it's worth about $1 million. And I'm trying to see what we possibly could do with capital gains tax. I have a brother and sister, so it's going to be a three-way division. But
have you been placed in possession yet?
No. Right now, they're doing with the will and all.
Oh, yeah. Your parents are still living.
No, they passed.
Okay, they passed. So they're probating the will. All right, capital gains, how long ago did they pass?
The last one, about 2 months ago.
Okay, well, I don't think capital gains will be less of an issue because you get what is called a stepped-up basis, meaning that the basis for your capital gains tax will be based on the date of death of the parents and not based on the purchase price back in the 1960s.
So what you want to do is evaluate the property. There's a gray area, right? So if you can evaluate it kind of to the higher end of the gray area, if you guys choose to sell it, you'll be placed in possession, and let's say it's worth $1 million. You'll be placed in possession at $1 million, and if you sell it for $1,050,000, you're only paying capital gains on $50,000. But if you sell it for $1 million, you pay no capital gains. So, because your basis becomes value at the time of death.
And
so that's what you base your capital gains on.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Okay. Colin, you want to go to a break or you want to go through some text?
Let's go through a text real quick. Okay. We had someone text in and said, when I do power of attorney for clients with multiple agents, I include language that specifies that both agents acting in their individual capacities shall be recognized as my true and lawful agent. Identifying agents as primary and secondary is what causes the problem. I think this is referring to the earlier text we had about the two children power of attorney.
Yeah. Well, what they're saying is if you have co-agents, you could put language in there that each could act independently of the other. Okay, so you could theoretically say that I have two co-agents, I only need one to make a decision. But again, the problem is if they disagree, then you got a problem. Because if they're acting independently of each other and they want to do something that is opposite of each other, then you're back at an impasse. But theoretically, in a power of attorney, if you want two agents, you can put language in there saying that they could act independently of each other, but it doesn't necessarily solve your problem as having two co-agents who may have two different ideas as to course of action, which are mutually exclusive and opposite. But that's a good text. Got another one?
Yeah, actually, this one's pretty simple, but it could be a doozy. Again, you guys are the lawyers, not me. Someone said, how does one set up an estate account? Just go to the bank, and do I do this before I die or after someone else dies? Like, how does that work?
So your executor, executrix, or anyone applying for the administrative position, if there's no will, will open up the succession, be appointed, and once they are appointed, then it's a very simple process. You get on the IRS's website, and there's a tab for it's very efficient. It's one of the things that is extremely efficient for the federal government. They want to give you a tax ID number so you can go ahead and open an account and start paying taxes, right? So what you do is you open, you get an EIN number or a tax ID number, and you will be, there's a specific box to check for executors of estates, and so or succession representatives, and you check it. You give them your social. You give them the deceased's social, and all, you know. And it's a very simple form. And usually within 24 hours, they will send you a sheet with your name as you know in your position as the administrator, and a new tax ID number. You bring that to the bank and say, look, I want to transfer this money into that account. And, you know, it's a very simple process. We typically do that for our administrators, executives that come into the office and you know, open a succession. It's a simple process.
All right. Let's take a break. It's Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Speedo by the Cadillacs. All right, Colin, we're going to let you earn your raise. All right, what else do we have for text?
We had someone text in and said, how can you find out if there is a power of attorney out there for, I guess, a specific individual that exists? Do you have to inform the other child or other interested parties?
I could say, one, if it's a good idea possibly to take the power of attorney and file it with the clerk of court so that it gives notice to all third parties that the power of attorney exists and it also that third parties can rely on it. As far as informing other children, it's probably a good idea to let other children know so that there's no suspicion.
No requirement. But
no
yeah,
requirement.
It's a good idea. Yeah.
There's no legal requirement to it, but it's a good idea to do that to maintain family harmony or preclude, you know, unnecessary family disputes. All right.
Yeah, and that, what happens a lot of times is people will, get kind of resentful and say, oh, wait a minute. You know, yeah, you took mama and talked into it. And she, you know, you made her do this and you influenced her and all this stuff. But, you know, if mama comes to you and says, look, this is what I did and this is why I decided this. And it might be a reason as simple as, because this sibling lives locally and you live in Arkansas and it's just easier for them to handle my affairs. It's more practical and it makes more sense that the person is here. It's always a good idea for full disclosure in families. I see quite often where mom lives with, you know, one sibling or one child, or the child lives with mom and is afraid to say, hey, look, you know, I'm going to tell everybody else. And, you know, I don't want to be part of the disagreement. And I'm just going to leave it up to them to handle after I'm gone. And I mean, I've seen that happen. And it's a terrible thing. Look, it's your money. It's your life. It's your decision. So let them know up front what the decision is and why. And that way there is no animosity, or there's less animosity, at least about that issue, moving forward during the time of the power of attorney or after your death.
There you go. All right. Let's take one more text. What do you got, Colin?
Let's see. This last one quickly said, hi, my mother had a stroke 15 years ago, and my brother managed her money and showed no records for the entire 15 years. She passed away in October last year. Nothing has been done, he claims, when she passed. The money was gone. He is the executor of her estate. What can I do? He refused to show any of the books, and I requested her tax returns. He refused that as well.
Well, I think it's one of those things, if you want to make the investment, you could open the succession as an interested party, and then you could eventually...
Well, the succession's already open. Succession's already open, and he's appointed as the executive.
Okay, well, then you could request an accounting. You can, if you're an heir, you can request an accounting and
right.
A detailed descriptive list, and the court will make them do an accounting, and if you think there's some issues involving the estate leading up to her death, you could subpoena the bank records and do a forensic to see whether the money was, you know, what the money was used for. I mean, but if she put them in charge.
We just did that. We just did that recently, and it took some time, but we were able to find some checks and documents where, you know, the mom received large sums of money and the executor was placing the money in her personal account. And so what we did was file the breach of fiduciary duty claim against the agent under the power of attorney, who was also the executrix of the estate, and consolidated them with the succession. And so when the house was sold, we clawed all that money back that the person, the agent under the power of attorney, same person, but in her capacity as the agent under this power of attorney, We clawed all that money back, and then it was redistributed among the heirs. So it's a, you know, again, it's a process. And you know, 15 years is a long time, and banks, I think, only have to keep records for seven. So, yeah. You know, it's like Doug said, how much money do you want to spend? How much did she have 15 years ago? I mean, was it, you know, a little money and a Social Security check every month? I mean, then is it really worth it? But if it's a bunch of money, you know, it might be worth, you know, hiring a CPA firm to go through and do an audit of whatever accounts and books and whatever they can find, and see what existed and see how it was spent.
All right. Let's go to our last break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, all things legal. We'll be back on November 24th. We'll be off until then. And you know, stay tuned for our first take with Charlie Long and Steve Geller, right? Yeah, Steve Geller. Okay, here's what I made some observations about the Saints. You know, Dennis Allen is 26-50. Really, realistically, they'll have to go. Yeah, as a head coach, they're going to have to probably finish 8-2 to be assured of being in the playoffs. They have this week the Chargers. They got the Panthers, Falcons, and Browns, which are all winnable games, all four of them, especially if they're getting healthy. But here's one thing I want to talk about last year, and maybe the difference. We were at 9-8, but last year, here were the quarterbacks. For last year was Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill, who's not starting. Carolina Panthers, Bryce Young started twice against us. He's vanquished to the bench. New England, Matt Jones, he's second string quarterback in Jacksonville. Indianapolis, Garner Minshew, who will not be starting much longer. Chicago, if you remember, Tyson Bagent. Tyson Bagent, who is nowhere to be seen. Minnesota, Joshua Dobbs, who's doing commercials but not playing. Atlanta had Desmond Ridder start twice. And the New York Giants, Tommy DeVito. Now, you know, on one hand, you say, well, Dennis Allen's had injuries this year. On the other hand, he had probably the 10 worst quarterbacks that have ever played in a season or teams played, and we went 9-8. So, I guess what I'm saying is this next 10 games will define Dennis Allen. I mean, he has the opportunity next four games.
I think he's already been defined.
Well, okay, let's put it this way.
Whether he's going to have to leave the country club, that's a whole different deal, right?
Well, I'm going to say defined. This is his last opportunity to demonstrate that he can be a head coach in this
league. You would hope, right? They could bring him back. You know, they brought him back this year, right? I don't understand it, you know, anyway.
But they do have the opportunity to win these next four games. These are four beatable teams, and if they're going to make the move, it is now or never. Because if they'd have come out anything less than 3-1, you know, you can pretty much – the season's not going to be a playoff season. And you have you have teams that – the Chargers are okay. They're average. You got the Panthers, you got the Falcons and the Browns, and they're all very beatable. You got the Falcons at home. So if Dennis Allen is going to make a claim that he should be the head coach of New Orleans Saints, he's got to do it in the next four games. If they come out anything less than 3-1, then, you know, the season is.
That's your analysis, but what is, you know, what is the top brass at the Saints' analysis?
I understand.
They kept him way too long. He's not a head coach in the NFL and should not have that title. So real quickly, though, I do want to give a shout out to the Tulane Green Wave beating North Texas, a very good team that gave Texas a heck of a game. They scored 40 points in their last three games before playing Tulane, and Tulane beat them pretty handily. So, you know, Navy just got beat by Notre Dame, and so. You know, they've got a couple of games left in their schedule, and they could end up being at the top of the conference. It could be kind of fun. How interesting would that be if Tulane made the playoff scenario and LSU did? But Anyway, yeah. But kudos to Tulane Green Wave. We're cheering for you. I know Doug's a homer with LSU, so we don't talk a ton about Tulane, but I do want to throw that in and Coach, give him our complete support.
Coach Sean Summerall is the real deal. He is the absolute real deal. We had met him originally after he was hired at a luncheon, and we saw him again. He is beyond competent, and he's got a great future. I mean, the only question will be how long will Tulane be able to keep him? And hopefully they'll keep him for a long time. But he is the real deal. He is – I mean, he's really two plays from being undefeated against Oklahoma and Kansas State or a couple of calls away. And, you know, they just – they got good talent, but they just – He squeezes every ounce of talent out of them, and they're the real deal. In fact, they may end up. It'd be interesting to see if they end up playing LSU in a bowl game if LSU doesn't make the playoffs, because I think that's a real.
Tulane might win their conference, and you know have that opportunity to make be in the top 12.
That's absolutely
if they win out.
So kudos.
You know, a lot can happen. A lot of football left to play, so we'll see. But
all right, we got about 20 seconds. Any parting shots, Albert?
No, we'll see y'all in a month. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the Louisiana Secretary of State and the business beneficial ownership reporting that's required. But I don't know if we have time to do that. But if you have an LLC, go to the website, Secretary of State, look under business services, and you will see beneficial ownership reporting. It's a federal requirement that you record, fill out that report and submit it before the end of the year.
Okay, so we'll see you. We'll see you in November 24th. Stay tuned for the Saints, and after that, also the Pelicans. See you in a month. Go Saints.